You are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is called Good Morning Comrade. We come on every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. You can check out our most recent interviews. We had Jen Briney from the Congressional Dish podcast. We also had Professor Harvey Kay on. Talked about the post-mortem on Bernie Sanders and his pulling out of the election and things like that. And Professor John Shelton, we talked about education and teachers unions. I've kind of been doing a lot of interviews recently. But anyway, you can get more information about the show on goodmorningcomrade.com. Robert's here, and so is Scott. What's going on, y'all?
We're here.
We are here.
On this beautiful Tuesday or Thursday.
It's Tuesday this time.
Oh, I knew that. It's just, you can't tell what day it is.
That means no cursing.
It's true.
Yeah, no cursing. Did I say a curse?
No, but I'm just letting you know.
Okay. Ahead of time.
Yeah.
Good. No cursing. I'm not going to. I never do. Not ever on a Tuesday.
I never curse on Tuesday.
Yeah, I've actually been blessed with a job and been going to work because I'm essential. But that's not, I don't mean that facetiously. Like, I'm actually like blessed to be able to go into work.
Mm-hmm.
My workplace is pretty much safe. Because there's like three people in our office.
Mm-hmm.
So I just go in, I do my thing for 8 hours, pretty much by myself and leave.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal. So I'm blessed to still be getting a check.
You got really in there just in time, didn't you? You got started just in time.
Tell me about it. And like just in time to like not know anything. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm not expected to do anything.
Not only do you not know anything, but you're also essential.
Yeah, it's pretty much money for nothing and checks for free.
Yeah, that's the way you do it.
Easy, dude. But other than that, I had to take a break from like social media because I'm super depressed right now about the state of the world.
Posting is hard right now. It's a hard time to post. To be a poster.
So what I've been doing is like devoting a lot of time to the house, like getting it in order. I've cleaned out the office where I'm recording right now on a Zoom call. I've got and I'm making space because I figured, hey, I want to do things that bring me joy. I'm actually looking for, as we speak right now online, a Neo Geo MVS cabinet of any slot. It could be 1 to 6 slot big red arcade machine.
Whoa.
Don't care which.
You get, get that X-Men game. Get that X-Men cabinet game. That game was awesome.
Neo Geo. Okay. I can play it on my computer. I don't care. I want the authentic like cabinet.
Metal Slug.
Yes, Metal Slug, Samurai Showdown, or Samurai Spirits in Japan, King of Fighters, Mark of the Wolves, all that good stuff.
King of Fighters.
I don't think Aaron's too happy about it, but it's gonna happen.
She's not here, so yeah, can't complain about it on the radio at least.
So if you are selling or know someone that is selling a cabinet for a reasonable cost anywhere in the U.S., I am willing to have it shipped. And
contact at goodmorningcomrade.com.
Please do. Hit me up on Twitter or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Because those things are kind of hard to find. I actually spent Friday and Saturday watching an arcade auction.
Whoa.
So I watched a online arcade auction and put some bids down, and I couldn't find like the people who are like SNK cabinets are like, if you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the Ferrari Testarossa or the Lamborghini Testarossa or the mm-hmm. Ferrari 911.
It's the fancy shit.
That's the Ferrari. Yeah. It's the Ferrari Testarossa.
Isn't it though? It's like
Lamborghini is always named after like some fucking bull or some stupid shit.
It's like it's just the video game equivalent of just yeah, catalog. Are you ready? Like, we're the best. We cost the most. This is like a luxury machine. Mm-hmm. Get over it. Back in the this is like a history of, so back in the 90s, this is 90s,
way market, way back.
They actually made a home console that was arcade perfect and used a derivative of the boards, the controller, the cartridges that went into the arcade machine. You couldn't change them back and forth, but they were like pretty much the same. This thing cost $600 in like 1990s money. So they were just like, yeah, we're the best. Like, if you want arcade perfect at home, like, here you go.
Is that like half a million a day?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, my buddy has one. His wife got him one because he always wanted that. I don't want the home console. I want the arcade, mm-hmm. The actual stand-up. My buddy got – his wife bought him the home console. She said that she paid on eBay like $1,000 for it.
That's ridiculous. And
it came with like six games or something. But I've heard there's really rare games out there that go for like tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, well, like Donkey Kong Country and Banjo-Kazooie?
No, it's I forget what it's called. I think like the last Samurai Showdown that was made, Samurai Showdown 5, which it would. So this is how long that thing had a run. So it came out in like 90, right? The last game for it was made in like 2000. Mm-hmm. It's so dumb how long, like, because people are like, this is an arcade perfect thing, I want it. I actually read online, I want to say on Reddit, where somebody said, because I'm like in all the forums and stuff, and somebody said, I always hated the Neo Geo SNK machine because it seemed like something that only like guys in the 80s who worked on Wall Street, who did a lot of coke and like had sex with hookers, like those are the type of people who owned it. And I was like, yeah, that's a pretty fair assessment. Yeah.
Only Wall Street cokeheads and Tom Cruise from the movie Big had that.
Pretty much, but yeah. So I want the big stand up because it's Corona time, and I want to bring joy. That's something I've always wanted. Like I don't let my things like be known because I don't want my dreams crushed. But I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna make my office into my little like late 80s, 90s, like white time capsule of Japanese video gaming, and that's where I'm gonna ride this thing out.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of cabinets, I bring this up only because it kind of like hits on a sweet intersection of video games and scammers. Did you ever see that video of Billy Mitchell when he had So Billy Mitchell is one of the guys that was like the Donkey Kong like world champion or whatever, or at least he had the like record in the books. Mm-hmm. But there was this like a video that they made of him changing out like one cabinet for another that was so obviously fake. I don't know, like it's just, well, I appreciate the theatricality of the scam.
Yeah.
Yeah, they change out the motherboard of like one of these games, but they didn't actually do it. It was just for the cameras. It's amazing. Yeah. What was the video that was? It was the guy that put that video out.
I don't know. I think it was the weird guy who's like his enemy. Because I only saw the movie where he's got.
Oh like, yeah, no, it totally was. You're right, Scott. I can't think of his name, but yeah, it totally was that guy who was like, no, it wasn't. It wasn't Steve Weeby.
No, it was like
a guy who was like in his entourage, and then they fell out. He was like, I'm gonna tell on Billy. He snitched on him. Am I right about that? Or no?
He had like a record for like, I don't know. I'm like just throwing something out there, like Huber or some stupid like thing.
It was for Ladybug.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about. What's Ladybug? What's Ladybug?
But
it's
like
a video game. It's a lame old video game.
But like because like they he was involved with them, they were like, because like I guess Billy Mitchell hated him for some reason, or he cheated him out of like one of his records.
And Billy Mitchell probably sued him.
Yeah, something stupid. But then after that, he like became like an ECW bad guy, and he was just like cutting all these promos about the guy. And then like he was just kind of like always like out to like sabotaging and stuff.
Just so, like a lot of cheating and speed running video games,
high score stuff.
But with him, yeah, I just don't understand why you would like lie about something.
I love it.
I mean, that's his whole like.
I mean, it's like when anything is popular. Like if you're like some guy who. It's like an awful nerd, and you just only read Spider-Man, and then everybody gets in Spider-Man. You're just like, oh, well, I'm mad now because this was like my thing.
You can't help but be hipster about it.
Yeah, like you were around for a while and you're like, well, I got to at least like put my sticks down and like see what I can get out of this. Mm-hmm. And then like, I don't know, people were just like, they were just the carving up that like old video games. They were like, this is my little fiefdom or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Why would you lie about something so dumb?
Oh, but it's rampant. Like, I guess that's the whole thing is like, it becomes one of these sort of situations. When it comes to like cheating in video games and like speed running and all this other stuff, to the point where like it's a small enough thing where people like, or at least you can convince yourself that people won't investigate it and like won't ever bust you, but they do. And it's great. I love it.
It's almost like, you ever see the Thomas Crown Affair?
I have it.
It's like a movie about like this like awful, like, billionaires,
yeah, rich guy,
mergers and acquisitions guy, and he's just like,
how did this rich guy steal art?
And then he like sets up a heist so that they can get caught while he actually robs the place.
Yeah.
And then like this insurance adjuster is like all following him around, and you're just watching this like insurance detective go against this millionaire, and you were like, who are, like, who cares about this shit?
Yeah. Like, and it's like the protagonist in that framing, like the insurance claims guy is like the lamest person that there is.
No, the insurance claim person was Renee Russo.
Oh, it's still pretty lame.
No, and like she fell in love with the guy and they had this whole cat and mouse thing.
Oh my god.
Oh, it's all right, man. It's all right movie, but like, there's a guy, Brian Grubb. He writes online and, he kind of had a thing where he watched the Thomas Crown Affair since like all this like social distancing things. And he was like, yeah, I shouldn't have rewatched that one because it's about like this millionaire just like ruining all these like poorer people's lives. Like,
how many security guards who were making $9 an hour got fired because of Thomas Crown and his BS?
Like, Dennis Leary plays this cop character who like he's just kind of around.
He always
does
that. He's either a cop or a firefighter.
But like he's like this cop character, and he's basically like kind of like solved the crime. But like at the end of the day, he's like, I don't give a shit about this like dumb bullshit. Like, I don't give a shit about pain. Like this does not matter to me. But like, I'll just go back to like maybe this is a little bit ideal.
You know what matters to me is that you're cursing on radio.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
you're bringing up a lot of work for
like this is idealized, but he's basically like, I don't care about this. I'm just gonna go back to like solving actual crimes, like. I'm going to do my job.
Yeah, I'm going to do some real work.
Yeah.
Like art, like the question that comes up is like how valuable is art actually to the society? And you know, that can kind of transition us to how valuable are certain things to the society. And I bring this up in light of the idea that like we're all sitting at home, hopefully not leaving the house very much. But if you are, like, hopefully you're being careful. Like Robert said, he's going to work and it's fairly safe. But like, there's, you know, both like the president, Donald Trump, in the middle of this whole thing. And then these groups in like Ohio and Florida and Michigan who are all like, we need to restart America and get back to work again. It's not fair that I can't go out and get my hair dyed or whatever. That's sort of like where we're at this point. Like, well, is that actually something that's important to real people that we risk?
I think that,
like, people's lives to go, like, you know, keep continuing enriching rich people.
There was this thing that was on the thing is in the paper today. It was basically like this big, like, page ad in the paper, like, mm-hmm. you never see anymore. Like, almost like
a Times Picayune?
Or whatever one. But anyway, it was just like, hey, we're the business owners. We need to open the business up. We
reopen America.
Like, we're worried about employers not being able to make rent. Like, we're worried about employees, like, going check to check and all this stuff. And it's like, on the bottom is like all these concerned citizens. And it's like all, I looked them up, and like one's like an old councilman, like the only Republican councilman, like the city council that was like in 20 years. This guy, Jay Batt. This other guy who like is like literally like a jewelry mogul. Like he's like he owns like on either side of the Atlantic many jewelry stores and stuff. Like he's like a diamond mogul or something like that. It's just all these people like that went to, like one guy that went to Newman. Like come on, man. Like these are the people.
What is
like,
he, Manning?
Oh, I don't know, but I thought they went to Country Day.
Mm-hmm.
But what are these things you're talking about? You're talking about things nobody did. I don't even know what we're talking. What's like, a country day? What's country day?
These are just like
the private schools in New Orleans. They're like, okay. Like where the upper echelon goes. The Manning, all of the Mannings went to Newman.
Yeah, the Jesuits, like all the places like that.
I the elite Holy private Cross. Schools.
Yeah, but anyway, like it's just all these are the people that like want us to go back to work or the people on the top. Like,
why is going back to work bad?
Why is it going? Because we'll die. I'll die. Like I'm in.
I've actually had conversations with my mom about this. Who's I would consider her, and I would consider her a Republican, like a conservative. But I mean, she had our conversation went like this. It's just like the thing is, you're asking people. This is what she said. She said, well, what about like all the people who can't get paid? Like, what are they supposed to do? You know, if we don't reopen the economy, I go, well, mom, here's the deal. Cause you know how we usually have these conversations. It's like, I don't want to talk to people of like what I stand for. I try to figure out like, okay, what's your hot button? I'm like, mom, you're in a tax bracket to where like you actually pay taxes every year. I go, the deal is if people aren't getting, if people aren't making paychecks, if people aren't making money, and she had a good point of like, well, what are farmers supposed to do who are growing all this food and manufacturing food and people can't buy it and they go out of business? And I told her, I was like, we did this before during the Great Depression. We just as the government should just be buying the food and redistributing it. And the thing is that if you're paying taxes, going back to like she's in a tax bracket to where she actually pays taxes, then what is your government good for? If they're not here to like serve the population, especially in times, they should be doing that anyway. But if they're not here to take care of people in time like this, what are they good for? I mean, what are you paying taxes for? And she seemed to kind of understand that. And I said, the second thing is there's no middle ground here. Like you're telling people that they should sacrifice their lives so the line can go up. You're literally sacrificing to the golden calf in New York that sits outside of Wall Street. I go, that's crazy. Like, Who do you think should die, you know, mom, that people can't – so Fuddruckers can open back up? Should I die? Should my brother die? Your husband? Like, who should die? Mm-hmm. So you're asking – you're there's no and middle ground. To, like, I am against – I'm too. Anti-human sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just not a thing we can do. And I tell you something else. With these jokers out here who are taught, like – and I'm pro-gun. Like, I'm pro-gun leftist.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
These jokers out here with all these guns, and they're in the street, like, going, we need to open up the government so Baskin-Robbins can get back open. And, like, these are the people who are telling me they're going to do if and or whatever, and they're itching for some kind of civil war.
And they're all driving into, like, fancy extended cab trucks and stuff. Right.
But you're telling me that you're gonna defeat the leftists in some kind of a fake imaginary civil war. I'm saying this is a spicy take. You're saying that you're in some kind of civil war in your mind that you're going to, and you're a survivalist, you're going to do this and that, but you can't take Buffalo Wild Wings being closed for 3 weeks. Like that's your line in the sand. And I tell you what,
Buffalo
like,
Wild Wings has to stay open the whole war.
If anything, in any kind of armed conflict, of course, like it would matter. This is my spicy take of the week. Any kind of armed conflict to where it's like, these weird neoconservatives and versus like leftists. Of course, it depends on what way the military and the police break, but we win that fight because I will take people who have like nothing to lose. I will be on the side of people who have like nothing to lose versus people who will have like everything to lose. I'll put my bet on the people who have like nothing to lose all the time. Because if these people are already upset because Baskin-Robbins isn't open and a good majority of the people in this country are already living in hell on a daily basis who before COVID-19 couldn't make ends meet and had food insecurity. I put my money on those people.
Yeah. Well, so the question becomes for me as to who's going to actually, you know, come out on the top of that whole sort of situation, armed or not, like it could be a political conflict that happens throughout this entire process and how it would be. But like the question becomes, like no matter what the engagement or what the conflict is going to be, the winner will be the side that's the most organized and that can garner the most power, period, the end. And I do agree, at least to the point where you're saying that, like, if these certain like very superficial, you know, parts of our society, like Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever, you know, aren't available, and then you're just going to crumble because you just can't take it. That mean that shows me a fundamental weakness on your side.
100%.
All right. Not to get like too jokey about this serious thing.
Get jokey jokey.
Let's say like some crazy shit happens tomorrow and like everything's gone, whatever. What is the last chain that's open, like Taco Bell and Demolition Man? Like, what do we think? Which one's got the power?
I was just thinking about Demolition Man the other day. All restaurants are Taco Bell. No, Popeye's not nationwide. It's got to be something nationwide.
Oh, Popeye's is nationwide.
Not nationwide. Like, you can get Popeye's in Ohio, I know.
I'd put Popeye's against Taco Bell.
You got to have Popeye's in the swing states.
Yeah.
It's got to be. Honestly, I'm going with Taco Bell because it's the one that can win the franchise wars. Like, they're the cheapest. The ingredients are abundant. They can go without, like, animal protein if they have to. I think that they've got the worldwide, like, infrastructure to get things, like, through shipping lines that, like, other restaurants, other fast food joints don't. I think Taco Bell does. I think that
they're the winner.
They're the winner. And Demolition Man was just visionary prophets.
You know? Whoa. You saying they called their shot?
Yeah.
I just learned how to do three seashells. Scott, stop cursing.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. I'm doing a bad job this week.
Just edit the show, I guess.
You can edit the show.
How do you do it?
Have you ever made a YouTube vid? Same way.
I've not.
No, you never done that? That's it. That's your generation, man. You gotta do the YouTube.
He's not actually a millennial.
I'm not Twitch. Very. I'm kind of the layover.
He's the worst millennial.
Yeah, bad. Well, dude, not all millennials have to like know how to do all the computers.
Yeah, only the good ones.
People ask me all the time. Like, my mom's like, "Hey, how do you do my phone? How do you fix my phone?" I'm like, "I've had an iPhone for like 6 years." Like,
no, she's used to going to Dean for that.
Yeah,
that's the thing, though. A lot of people think like people have some kind of magic touch with it's just Google. Do you know how to use Google?
It's like I'm an elf, and all elves can talk to like animals or whatever. Yeah. It's like, no, like people.
No, my Aaron's the same way. My wife's the same way. She's like, "How do you?" And I'm like, "Have you asked Google? Have you asked the Oracle on your $1,000+ phone yet?
Have you asked the FBI?"
Yeah. Do you know how to? You know that, yeah. You know that $1,000+ supercomputer you got in your pocket?
That's got more technology than it took to get to Mars.
Yeah, you can ask that things, and it will give you answers to things.
Well, yeah. Well, my phone don't have the horsepower. It's not a rocket.
Come on, use the Googles. But no, this stuff is like it's really bad. Because I am not prepared to die for Wall Street. Like, that's just not going to happen. And I hope that more people, if I had my way, and I think that this is not something out of like, this is not utopian. I think that we need to be organizing the pooling of funds we need to be putting our money and resources together to provide mutual aid and provide a way so even in the short term, people can like walk off the job. And don't worry about like don't have to worry about how they're gonna feed their family or any kind of like basic material needs because we have to create a way so people don't have to go to a death camp to try to make a wage. It's crazy.
And the unions have been doing like really stepping it up in this time too. I mean, I've been talking with some friends of mine who organize, like I was saying earlier, probably on a previous episode, you know, hospital workers who are not getting, you know, sufficient PPE or like construction trade workers in some of the bigger cities are not showing up or walking off the job because they're, you know, the projects that they're building are things like hotels, like luxury hotels, in the time where they're, you know, why do you need a luxury hotel when there's a global pandemic? Why do you need to be building that right now? And there's a lot of organizing and a lot of action that's being that's taking place. Amazon workers, right? Or the Instacart workers that walked off the job. It'd really be great if we could find a way to get, or at least get in contact with Chris Malls, who is one of the workers who was with Amazon.
Oh yeah, actually we should. Did you hear him on? He was on
one of those
Rising the other day.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was on Rising last week, and yeah, he's pretty good. Apparently, this is his life now, where he just he's an activist now. That's his profession.
You know what? Good. I mean, like,
socialist. What is your profession? Oomph. Yep, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I post IRL. That's my job. But again, like, he was one of the main organizers for people who are listening. He was Chris Smalls was one of the main organizers for the Amazon workers when they essentially threatened to go off the job. And he was the board of Amazon essentially conspired against him because Chris Smalls is like, they were saying things like he's not intelligent he's not sort of the loquacious or whatever enough to
big props to who was ever in that room.
Yeah, whoever leaked that information from this board meeting or whoever leaked the minutes or the nature of these discussions. Shout out to you. I mean,
let me know so I can like hit your Venmo.
Yeah, if you're like a little staffer or whatever. But
actually don't let me know because I need plausible deniability when the
Bezos
squad comes.
Don't tell me nothing.
You can't torture it out of me. So just say you're that guy and let me know and I'll $35.
Robert, I'm that guy.
All right. See, you should don't let me know. Now when they come torture me.
That was your trap.
And then when they get Robert, they're going to come for you. So you just owned yourself.
Man. Well, at least I'll have a head start.
But no, props to them. So we still got moles in the. So, you know, we got moles at the highest level, y'all.
Yeah.
Be afraid.
Wait, I've heard people say that, like, these Wildcat strikes aren't great because they're not attached to, like, labor movement.
So that's a good question.
How do you
question.
Feel about that labor guy?
So Wildcat strikes, there's an entire discourse around them, and there's a lot of
I mean, I was just gonna say, like, I think even if they're not like attached to these like old organizations that have been around for like 50 years, like, I mean, it gets the idea that like they should have results.
So I guess
like,
the question becomes, so the question for me becomes, what is a wildcat strike? Who is calling what a wildcat strike? And what does the wildcat strike purport to do, and what does it actually do is sort of the question that I ask, because my sort of general analysis of those kinds of things, for the most part, is that they can essentially, wildcat strikes, first off, let's define what a wildcat strike is. Scott, what is a wildcat strike?
It's just when a bunch of people are like, we're going to do a strike, and they're like kind of unaffiliated other than that they work together.
Oh, so, I mean, that's a strike, but a wildcat strike is more specifically a strike that takes place outside of the channels of like union leadership where it exists. So that's a specific thing already. And
it's
there
kind
are
of
people,
just a bunch of workers that are like, we just need to do this. Like, there are no institutions, but we need to stop being at work.
Right. So where those structures don't exist, it's not a wildcat strike. It's just a strike. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So, and again, like, I don't mean to like be pedantic here, but it's important. And specifically because there are people who kind of make a career of making hay of like overplaying these sorts of things. For a specific reason of, and I'm not saying this is what you're doing, Scott, but there are people.
Hope not, because I'm definitely not doing it. Cause I don't understand it yet.
But there are people that are that like have a career in like online labor coverage or whatever, who cover things like wildcat strikes, who have an interest in saying, well, look at all these wildcat strikes. Why is nobody talking about it? I'm the only person that's talking about them. And they can be things that are almost traditional labor actions. Like there were some building trades workers that I was talking about earlier on the East Coast, rather, who were walking off the job. And these things are totally sanctioned by, you know, and maybe I can get a friend of mine on talk about this further. who knows more about this. But essentially, they're totally sanctioned by the union leadership, or at least they're democratically decided by membership, and they're just being called wildcat strikes. And it's like, well, let's hold on a second, and let's talk about what we're talking about here for real, you know? And that's something that's done specifically to create a narrative and a brand for certain people.
I don't know. I could see where it'd be advantageous to get, like, for, like, labor unions to be kind of distanced from any striking because, like, you know, the bad history and the rhetoric the government has used, like, for years about them, like, being affiliated with organized crime and all. But, you know, like, maybe getting the idea of striking, like, outside of those, like, kind of established unions, like, isn't the worst thing for unions.
I think it's a problem in the sense that, like, actually getting, like, everybody, like a wildcat strike is essentially a minority strike. A minority of a unit is going out on strike, and that's making the decision for most of the people. That's something that is actually fundamentally not democratic, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of like where the problem becomes, because the infrastructure of the unions and the organizations that will be, like, even if this is actually a wildcat strike, which I you know, I'm not exactly convinced of on the front end, unions are supposed to be democratic organizations. I say this constantly. And if you cannot get the democratic buy-in for something to happen, then you're not going to get the resources that go along with these organizations to do the thing that you want to do.
I mean,
pure and simple.
I think there's definitely, like, something to that, but also, like, you, like, the Democrats, you, like, the democracy you talk about is, like, the majority wins, like, the mob rules, kind of, like.
No.
In most situations, like, the minority groups should have some say in things.
Like, they should definitely have, like, they should have a say in the matter, and they can control sort of, like, their direct circumstances. But, like, how far is it, like, in terms of responsibility, when a minority of people are making a decision for the majority of an entity, which, I mean, you could actually argue, you know, happens in most circumstances. The majority of the people face the consequences for what happens, no matter what, right?
Sometimes the scale isn't, like, indicative of, like, what needs to be changed.
Perhaps, but, I mean, again, you need to get that buy-in. Like, again, and this is sort of, like, where I kind of get really fuzzy on the whole, like, question around, like, wildcat stuff. I kind of have a fundamental, not necessarily, if it's not a trust, there is a, like, a legitimacy in the ability to win the, essentially to win the assent of most people. And if you're not able to do that, then you're not going to have legitimacy in what you're doing, which means that you're in a much weaker position to do what you want to do. And I'm talking kind of in abstractions here. So I could put an example to this if you'd like. So if you...
Please do.
If I wanted, if me, first off, you're listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This is Good Morning Comrade. So, like, if you, me, and you, Scott, me, and Robert are, like, three people who are, like, working at name the place, like,
Blockbuster.
Blockbuster.
Okay, Blockbuster, right? And there's 50 people that work at Blockbuster, right?
Yeah.
And you, me, and Robert decide that we're going to go on strike. And we don't actually have, you know, the other 47 people on our side to make the decision for a strike to actually happen. We're screwed in a whole bunch of different ways, right? One, we don't have most of the people to do that we want to do, so it's very easy to isolate and eliminate us, right?
Yeah.
Two, you don't have most of the people acting. You don't have an actual agreement amongst, like, the power in any kind of a labor action is the ability to move the large group of people to do the thing that you want to do. So if you, me, and Robert get fired for doing a wildcat strike or whatever, even if we're on the same shift or whatever the hell, there's going to be essentially anti-union practices that would be felt by every single person on that staff, right? And that, so essentially, that it would be much more, essentially, the burden of proof would become, as from the boss's perspective, on the workers to prove that they're not involved with that. And they're going to, I mean, if you don't get any buy-in from them, they're just going to say, well, screw them. They just were acting on their own. So, I mean, I made it a very simple example for the reason, just to clarify that in order to, it doesn't have to be the perfect situation. And I would say that, like, there would need to be like an organizing group that would have to be what is able to get most of the people involved to make a decision and act in accordance. And that's where the power of any kind of strike is. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Did that make sense?
It does. It's a way to organize labor power without, without having, I don't want to say without power, but
it's not, though. It's not power. Like, you have the power of the individuals collectively put together. Yeah. But if it's just three people, if it's a minority of the people that are involved, and this is not exactly what's happening across every situation is different. But this is an example of and I would even probably say an extreme example of a minority sort of like saying they're acting in the name of the majority, because they can say like, we three are acting in the name of all of the other workers. But if they're not with you, guess what? You're just not helping anybody and you're making things actually worse.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, what's the other side of that then? What should you do?
You organize them all. I mean, you got to build it and make it happen. And if you can't do that, then you can't do anything. If you can't build power, then you can't do anything.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like it's kind of like fraud. Like I feel like you're kind of even saying that you shouldn't do anything.
No, I'm not. I'm definitely saying that you should. No. I'm saying that that's if you want anything to change, that you need to do it. But the work isn't necessarily in like the strike itself. The work is in building the power so that you have the leverage to do that in the first place. And a wildcat strike to me seems like a shortcut.
I mean, some people don't have like a long time to do things. Like, there are definitely situations where like this.
Right. Like, okay. You know, Scott brings up a great point. So guy at Amazon, like, people are literally getting sick and dying.
Mm-hmm.
So what is he supposed to do? Wait till, you know,
he was organizing.
He can organize everybody, check, or just like,
that's what he was
bring
doing.
Attention to him and go, this has got to stop right now.
Well, that's what he was doing, and definitely bring attention to it for sure. Definitely 100% bring attention to it. And I'm not even saying that he necessarily did anything wrong. But my point is that you can't just determine when, and I'm not saying this with Chris did either, because it's not. He was in the middle of an organizing project when he got fired. That's what happened, right? But like the idea of that it's not in it, but that's a discrete thing from like wildcat strikes. That's a different thing, I guess.
But like, you look at the wildcat strike, like, okay, so the wildcat strikes are the teachers. Like, you're I don't understand. Like, the wildcat strikes are the teachers in what, West Virginia?
So that was a different situation as well.
How was that different?
So that was that was a majority of membership rejecting the claim or the sort of this is the decision essentially so let me reset just sort of like to clarify what this situation is that happened specifically in West Virginia, right? So in 2000, and actually I could talk to my friend Heather, maybe she would come on the show and talk about this as well. But in 2018, the West Virginia teachers statewide went on strike. And there were negotiations that took place. They were out for a couple of weeks. And there were negotiations that took place on the part of the union leadership that was done on behalf of members across the state that essentially there was an agreement between leadership only and membership, right? And there were like in the organizing structure of this statewide strike, there were district level and even like localized entities, and even to the point where it was organized by building and by hallway. There were essentially organizing structures that were democratic decision-making spaces by the teachers, and they essentially was the building blocks to create this ability to even do a statewide strike. And then the leadership of the organization, and again, the leadership of the West Virginia teachers essentially came to a decision that these democratic institutions that were established rejected and said in a democratic way, like in a majority way, said, this is not, we're not accepting this and we're staying out. And that's a different thing fundamentally than what we were talking about earlier.
So are you saying if you've got the numbers, it doesn't really matter what your, union is dictating, like what they to do. You're saying all that matters in a labor movement is just if you have enough numbers to, for lack of a better word, hurt the management.
To essentially act in the interests of workers. Yeah.
Okay. We're talking the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's where all of the power of labor comes from. The fact that A, we do the work, and B, that there are most of us. Like, that's the thing that makes the working class so revolutionary, and that's where all the revolutionary potential within our society lies, because all of the work that, all of the stuff that gets done in our society, all the profit that's created is created off our backs. Period. The end.
Yeah.
That's like 101. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, yeah. No, for sure. I just don't, my problem is, when you keep everyone, I can't remember if we talked about this before or not, even on the show,
mm-hmm.
is that our society is smarter than like other tyrannical societies throughout history, where we're the 1% capitalist overlords, whatever you want to call it, ruling class, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Tom,
they're smart enough just to keep you hanging on enough. To give you just enough that you can make it to the next day.
Correct.
To where other societies didn't. So it's hard to convince people. It's the same old adage. Like, what do we do in the meantime, you know, to materially help workers to say, hey, if you're going to walk off the job, here's what we're going to do the moment you walk off the job to make sure that at least like your basic fundamental like needs.
Right. There needs to be a plan in place before you can walk off the job.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's critical. And to that, I would say, like, in order to even get the, like, those kinds of structures and procedures in place, like before you can even start making that strategy, I suppose, you need to get people at least on the same page and determine and diagnose what the problems that we all share are. Right. And then once you sort of can identify what those issues are, so one that's really coming up right now, especially in the midst of this coronavirus business, is, again, and it's always been the case, but the healthcare program, right?
Right.
People are losing their jobs and they're not having healthcare because the way that our society is structured is because our jobs are tied to our healthcare. Now, if the way that traditionally this has been approached is that, you know, unions would bargain with employers to get a health care through the employer, right? Now, in most other countries, that's not the case. The power of the labor movement has been aimed not just at employers, but the agent of the employers, which is the government, and able to get things that are like socialized healthcare systems, which are democratic reforms ensconced in policy for the nation, which is a lot more firm and secure than just employer-based healthcare coverage. So that's an example, I suppose. And in terms of actions to get that to get implemented, that's a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where we're at. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't really make any movement until
we need to all agree that it's a problem first, right?
Yeah. No, I don't think you get frontline workers to. I don't even think you need buy-in from frontline workers. I really don't. I think they all feel the same way as what we're talking right now. Everybody who's quote unquote essential, who's out there working jobs, they feel the exact same way.
Grocery clerks.
What do you want them to do?
Yeah.
You know, I noticed
they're still making like $9 an hour, by the way.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
you know, I love propaganda. And like, I noticed the other day, the one of the groups here in New Orleans, the People's Assembly, it was pretty like powerful and brave. What they've been doing is they've been putting together PPE, like masks and hand sanitizer, together in baggies. And they've just been going to grocery stores, like they've been going to like Winn-Dixie and Rouse's and stuff, and been handing that stuff out to like people at work, at their on their jobs. And while they're handing it out, they'll be like, yes, you are essential. You need here's some hand sanitizer and a mask. You need more pay. You need a union. You need, you know,
whatever they pay you, it ain't enough.
Yeah, like, and people are like, yeah, we do need that. Like, they know what they need. People don't need convincing that their job is like shit.
Yeah,
that,
if that's the case, like, that's one of the
corporations they work for are trash. What they need is a way to like tether. They need a way to like cut the cord.
Yeah, yeah. They don't. So I think you actually hit on something really good there. Like, they don't need to know how bad stuff is right now. They need to know what is possible. They don't need to think, like we don't need to know what's standing in the way of like making things better or whatever. We need to know what things can be made better. So, and that's something to affirmatively strive for, because I think that sort of like that affirmative orientation promotes action as opposed to the reverse, which is like, well, the boss is preventing me from getting healthcare. You know, that comes later, I suppose. But saying, like, affirmatively stating, oh, these things are necessary for us to be working, or for that everybody should have, or especially the people. I mean, again, everybody should have healthcare. But like right now, the people who are doing that kind of work definitely are like in much more of a. So I'm definitely fumbling and stumbling all over myself here. But like they have an acute need for healthcare and better pay and better respect on the job, as again all workers always do. The thing right now is that is a specific thing to point to right now as an example where the contradictions are so glaring that you cannot ignore them.
No, 100%. I'm reading right here. Let's see, is this 2 days ago? United will lay off its workers after receiving a $58 billion taxpayer funded bailout. Like
the airline,
United Airlines. So here you go. I mean,
and how did they get that bailout?
They went hat in the hand to the government and said, "Hey, man, we need this to keep our business afloat." Which they totally didn't.
Yeah, and then who voted for it?
Right,
Democrats and Republicans.
So I mean, they've made the calculation. This goes to a conversation we were having like off air. They've made the calculation that they're able to do this. It's not going to piss off enough people to hurt them. And people are going to be just hungry enough that they could hire whoever back for whatever they want to pay.
Probably less than they were making before.
Yeah. And give their CEOs pay raises.
Yeah. Big bonuses.
So what do we do?
Yeah, like, we have to, I mean, it's some point, and I'm not necessarily saying I have all the answers here, but we need to essentially have some kind of understanding that this is, we have to be aware that this is happening before we can do anything, right? You can't act without knowing what you're doing. So I guess that would be one. There needs to be a communication, because right now, if you put on the news, they'll be like, wow, the new bailout, you're going to get $1,200 for the, you know, or whatever. That's what gets the headlines. But again, there needs to be a way. And again, I think I've had conversations with several people about this in the shows that we've have intervened between the convenings that we've gotten together. But essentially, there needs to be a communication that is outside of the mainstream media. And the way that I kind of see that happening more and more isn't necessarily even like on shows like this, even though they're important and critical, and like independent media is important. It needs to be organized independent media. But I think that there needs to be a lot more information coming out directly from workers and workers' organizations, such as unions, going directly to people that is bypassing mainstream media. That's the next thing that's got to happen. And the technology already exists. I can give an example of that, actually, too. So during the teacher strike in Chicago in October, they had a very organized communications page that was for members and it was outward facing. And at the same time, they were doing a podcast that would go directly to members and the community. And the point of it was not necessarily to talk to their members, but it, even though it was, but it was also to say, well, this is the direct statement that is from the teachers and the teachers union and not filtered through any kind of media lens. And that's something that has to continue to grow, that kind of an ecosystem.
Whew. It just seems like, I don't know. It's
it's a lot.
Just say it again. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I can't look down on anybody who can't take care of the material, who without a plan to take care of the material needs to just be like, my job. Oh, yeah. Sorry, curse.
Totally.
But yeah,
well, like, I'm gonna be going up and down this one for curses, so it's all good.
Yeah, like, I just can't get mad at people because
I'm not mad at people for sure.
I know you're not mad, but I'm just saying people are hurting so bad that's
the people I'm most mad at are the people who are trying to like make hay with that kind of like trying to make things seem more radical than they are. Right, and I got a particular guy in mind right now who I'm not gonna name on air because I'll tell you off air, but he's terrible.
So anyway.
Yeah, anyway. What are you playing, Scott? I see you got a controller in your hand there.
Playing the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Oh, the remake? Maybe one day. I can't take that right now. Right. I can't take sad things.
You know what's really wild about that to me? The remake. And like we live in the age of remakes. And I feel like I'm rambling a lot on the show, so sorry about that. But I'm cooped up in my house.
Yeah.
But like I don't know, the idea that they can take a game that's 20 years old, cut it into bits, and then that's sell terrible. It over and over and over again
that's
back
so
to
ridiculous.
You.
Well, apparently it's a different game.
I know the interface is different. The battle screens are different and stuff.
They're weird, like meta elements and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like how that's some Square Enix.
Like it's some where like, oh sorry Jeff, it's some things where like. They know people know the story, so they're not giving you the same story. They're giving you like a different story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. So
like,
it's
kind of the same world, but there's some weird stuff going on. So I heard like
it's like when they chopped up The Hobbit into three different chapters.
Yeah,
that movie, that was bad.
It's kind of longer because like I played the first one a little bit, and like what it's taken me like 4 hours to do in the first one is taking like 15 or 20 hours. Like,
oh, really? Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's the only RPG that was actually my first video game RPG besides Dragon Warrior when I was like a super little kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only one that kept my attention because of, you know, they're like things going
so cool.
on the screen.
Buddy, you should have played Super Mario RPG because it had Super Mario.
I can only have one. I was a PlayStation child. I couldn't have both.
Well,
what am
well,
I, a silver spoon in my mouth? I can't do that.
What was Super Nintendo?
Oh, it was. Well, I was Sega.
Oh.
Sorry, Ben.
Sega was better. Yeah, Super Nintendo was better. But yeah, it's the only RPG I've played like multiple times. Final Fantasy. I just like that you're an eco-terrorist. I think that's something to aspire to.
It's a game about a bunch of poor people who try to blow up a reactor so
yeah, it's great.
The planet doesn't die.
Well, except for Cloud, though. Cloud's not... he's just a merc.
No, he's down for the cause.
Not at the
like
beginning.
Not in the very, very beginning, but like he has to be down for it enough to like completely break from Soldier.
It's like I've heard somebody talking about it, about how the game people think Final Fantasy is the game that it is, because like it's not just a game where you just like fight the guy with the big sword. It's about a guy who like doesn't have an identity. Like,
oh yeah, there's a lot of questions of identity in that game because of the sort of big twist. Where you find out like all, everything that Cloud thought that he was is actually not real.
Yeah.
Which is fun. Yeah. Maybe I gotta fire
character.
That game back up.
It's like cheap on Switch, it's like $8.
I have it already. But
I see you always playing Animal Crossing now.
You know, I have to defeat the evil Tom Nook, who is the owner of all things on every island in that entire universe.
Why should I spend $60 on that game when I own, I mean, this is a real question. Why should I spend $60 on that game when I owned Stardew Valley Go.
It's a different game. I mean, fundamentally, I think it's a different approach to a game. I think that there is more of sort of a... there's more of a... I want to say attitude and relationship between yourself in that game and like what you're trying to do. Like the thing that really kind of like blows me away about
seeing Animal Crossing is rude but cool.
No. Like Animal Crossing is like way more cutesy than Stardew Valley is, and it's ever been.
Yeah.
But there is like a harsh looming reality that everything that you want to do in that game, and specifically Animal Crossing, is you have to go into debt to do it, and you have to like you're always being judged, like by Isabel.
I think you're really understating the fact that like in Stardew Valley, you have to like do magic to save the rec center, and if you don't, like if you sell at the rec center, you make nothing, and like you still have to buy their product for a dollar.
Oh, and also the game, like you, the fun thing on Stardew Valley is that you can actually like defeat the Soulless Corporation.
Yeah, Stardew Valley is a very political game.
Yeah,
the guy who made that game, like he obviously hates Amazon, and hates everything about capitalism.
The wild thing about that game is that like you can just completely and utterly destroy the JoJo Corporation. You know, really? like that's a complete and utter fantasy. It's like got this weird catharsis to it.
Man, maybe I need to get back into that.
Yeah.
I haven't. All right.
Or you have the option, I suppose, to sell out to the JoJo Corporation and get all the same stuff, but like the story
Win. You have to pay like all of your money.
Yeah.
And you get nothing, like you don't get a community center, you get a warehouse where like
there's a soda machine in it.
There's a soda machine you can buy soda for a dollar. You don't even get like unlimited soda.
Yeah. Yeah, really? There's definitely some commentary there.
Huh? Yeah.
I need to get back into it.
Yeah, it's a fun game, but like it is definitely like a this or that. Like either or you don't engage. You don't have to, I suppose, complete the community center. But like
It's almost like a thing where it's like, are you going to invest in your community and get all these things back, or are you going to just like say f***
it? Or neither. Or like decide to just not engage with that part of the game.
Yeah.
Like you can just not go and do the community center stuff.
So apparently I haven't gone deep enough. I think I'm still in the first season. I honestly haven't been playing video games. But I'm still on that game. I know I'm still in the first season, like, but I've been trying to like court the orb mom who works at the part time at the bar.
Yeah. Emily.
I like her. Oh
yeah, that's my wife.
But apparently like the seeds that you buy from the Amazon are like kind of like real life. Like they're not good. They're
trash.
They're GMO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you got to get the good seeds that'll like replant themselves
from a local shop.
And I was like, what? I'm like, this game is like trying to tell me things.
Yeah, and we'll say one other thing.
You got capitalism. You got socialism mixed in my farming game.
Yeah, super last thing in terms of like a big difference between Animal Crossing and I mean there's of one of many, but this is sort of like the last one we have time for, is that in Animal Crossing the game is actually played in like real time. So like you don't have like day after day after day like you do in Stardew Valley, where it's like an abbreviated like, you know, 12 minute day or something like that. Like when you wake up in the morning and in Animal Crossing, it's the morning. And then
can't make time pass by going to bed.
Yeah, the only way you can make time pass is if you just like change the clock inside your Switch.
Right.
Or let time pass.
Yeah, you're gonna end up being in like,
you know, which by the way, in a weird sense, is actually kind of kept me regulated in a sense, as far as like, oh wow, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, because right now we live in COVID-19 world where nothing actually matters. Except, you know, I say that in a, I guess it sounds a little bit, you know, insulated, I suppose, but anyway, super last thing, we have 1 minute.
Go ahead. No, that's all. I mean, things still matter over here because you got to go to work in the morning.
To get my quota.
I hear what you're saying.
To get my quota, there was a Mad Men episode where Don Draper's real dad like broke up like a farmer's like socialist commune. Like he was kind of like the chairman and he's like, this is too hard. I'm quit. And then he died because he got kicked in the face by a horse.
He deserved it. All right, y'all.
All right.
Well, you can
listen. It's been real. I hope everybody's fulfilling all their quarantine dreams right now.
Quarantine. I'm just a quarantine-age dirtbag.
Good stuff.
You can listen to Good Morning Comrade on WHIV-FM at 8 o'clock. You can also get more information at goodmorningcomrade.com. You can also check us out Facebook, Twitter, all the stuff. Good Morning Comrade.
I'm on Twitter as at Tilden Katz.
Later. Yeah, you are.
All right. Love you. Bye.